alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-four way. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and tried to locate. This for the time, got time for no day war.
Welcome to another episode of the Crow Knows Podcast. I'm your host, AJ Crow. We're diving into the food distribution world today, produce locally, nationally, and it's a family affair today. I am joined by my brother, Danny Crow, Senior Director of Sales Operations for PROAC. Danny, thanks for joining today.
Thank you. I feel like I'm on an episode of the Merv Griffin Show.
That's true. Maybe another way to use the incredible LED board that Martin Skill has here.
Yeah,
and
great.
Set it up for
love it.
If we can get Kramer.
Appreciate
in here.
You having me.
Give everybody a little bit of a background in your almost 15 year.
Yeah, I started with ConAgra Foods out of college. Moved around the country, started in Dallas, Boston, San Francisco in different roles, and then was looking for something a little different, and so called a family friend and suggested the fresh food distribution world. She said, no one's coming up the ranks. There's no one, you know, everybody has been in it forever. And, you know, they need people to come in the industry. And he was definitely right about that, because there was definitely, you know, a lack of millennials in the industry. So took a job with a Cisco subsidiary, which is now a competitor where I am now. Moved back to Dallas after that and have been in this industry pretty much ever since. So I work for PROAC, which is we're a connector between farms, local distributors, and national accounts throughout the country. So love where I am. I'm on my second stint and, you know, really enjoy, you know, the industry has its challenges, but enjoy where I'm at. So
yeah, PROAC specifically, because obviously working for a Cisco company, which we both did, it's all under one flag, one umbrella, a national company. Technically, it's operated locally, but still operating as one unit. With where you are at PROAC right now, a much different model where you guys are managing from a national perspective, but these are still locally owned and operated companies. Talk a little bit about the difference there in perspective from a company that's trying to, like you said, connect these companies all together.
It's challenging. I mean, it's the biggest challenge we have because every market's different, right? And my job really is to put deals together that can be extend for national account concepts and then distributors across the country. So, you know, you have a New York market, right? A little bit more challenging than, you know, the Iowa market, right? So it's incredibly challenging, to be candid. Our model changed to where it used to be an equal cost share cooperative, which, you know, kind of operated similar to a Cisco, right? In that regard, like it was a all for one, one for all kind of deal. Now everybody's kind of working with everybody and it's an open network. So it's, you know, it is challenging getting the buy-in from everybody across the country for these deals is challenging, especially with rising costs. And look, they're delivering something that's dying. From the second they pick it up,
right,
it's dying, right? So it is a very high touch, low margin industry, which is, you know, about the worst case scenario you could ask for, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, with increasing costs. So it's not easy, but it is, you know, it's not boring. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would be surprised when you actually looking at the overall profitability and a P&L of a produce distribution company, how thin the margins actually are. And navigating so many different cost structures. But do you guys specifically fit in an interesting way, which is we've got a local company that, you know, could be here in Dallas, could be in, like you said, in New York or DC or something. A lot of their challenges being, you know, market share, purchasing power, things like that. So talk through how you guys are able to bring that national perspective to the local companies.
Yeah, I mean, we're essentially like a group purchase offering, right? So, you know, if they're a part of us, they get, you know, buying power of, you know, almost 50 million packages annually, right? So they get that leverage, which is huge for them. They get that access to national accounts to where, you know, they're operating under one entity, but still locally. So we at PROAC take title of all the product, which is really one of our biggest points of differentiation. So we get you know, preferential treatment from our growers, which is a big, you know, a big deal. And our contracts are fulfilled, because the other thing is, not only is this high touch, low margin, but it's also weather related too, right? Something can come in and hit that you're not expecting and wipe out the crop. And unlike most industries, the higher the price you pay, the worse the product is, right? So that's another like nice little fun niche about this industry is like things can get out of control. For instance, when it's probably 5 years ago, the cartel just used to come in and just wipe out the avocado crop, you know, because they felt like it. Yeah. Well, avocados went, they got to like $5 an avocado, right? So, you know, and they're scarce. So it's just, it's a very weird dynamic in the industry. I don't know if it was created by a rocket science or scientist or an idiot, one or the other, but it's very hard to corral. It really is. It's like almost AI resistant because there's no standardization in pack sizes or item descriptions or labels. So it's, you know, it's got its challenges for sure.
Yeah.
So,
and I want to talk a little more about the specifically, because it's almost impossible for one size fits all. Something to work in LA, where you're right there, where a lot of the product is grown in California, versus Chicago in the middle of the country compared to somewhere in South Carolina. What are the biggest challenges that you guys see just like that piece specifically, managing, you know, what's good for one person has to be good for the other, and then finding any middle ground there?
Great question. I would say, and yet again, my role is to put together deals that work for a national account chain and then to find a distributor that will service under those program parameters. No one that is in a growing concept or, you know, bands together on a national scale, no concept, wants to pay more, right? So they come to us with the intent to pay less, right? Because somebody came to us with an, you know, a request for pricing, something like that, to be able to take to their boss and say, hey, look at what this deal is that I'm putting together. We're going to save X amount of dollars, right? That's what they're looking for, right? On the flip side, distributors, it's not easy. Forget about how hard it is to, you know, service customers, and, you know, drivers are hard to get, right? Labor is hard to find, right? There's increased food safety and traceability demands on these distributors. So it is hard, right? They need more margin. They should have more margin because it's tough, right? But the national account concepts, you're not going to put together a winning deal for them by saying, hey, you're going to pay more, right?
Yeah.
So it really is a difficult situation on both fronts. And they have cost pressures, right? They don't want to increase their pricing to us who go out and eat all the time. And so, you know, there's no easy solution, right? And one thing about our industry that's changed is there used to be different segments. Like you mentioned the Sysco subsidiary, right? They used to only work with them, you know, mm-hmm. their world. We at ProAct only worked with our distributors, and they only worked with us. And then same with the competitors. Now it's an open network, right? Everybody's working with everybody. So if we were to go and say, hey, we want to put together the best deal for a distributor, right? Well, the restaurant concept might just go somewhere else, and, you know, they might go the cheaper route, and then, you know, the distributor might service under that program.
Yeah.
So everybody's working with everybody, which makes it even more complicated and costly and challenging.
Yep.
But, you know, so there is no formula, I would say, except for rather than treat everybody as a competitor, the way to win is whoever can look at everybody like a partner and figure out how to optimize that, whatever that buzzword looks like, they're the ones, that's going to be the winning formula, but no one's cracked it yet.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people that are just going up and showing up to a restaurant, they obviously don't realize what goes on behind the scenes. When you work in the industry, you get a completely different perspective. But the fundamental reason why any of these programs exist is you've got, like you mentioned, a growing chain or something that anything that's in multiple markets, different cities, they need each customer's experience to be the same. And so they go to one in Dallas, they want it to be the exact same as when they go in LA or they go in Chicago or they go anywhere else. And so that they're coming to you for that standardization of pack size, mm-hmm. of spec, of type of product, whatever it is. And then so you're taking that to your distributors or whoever's signing up with your program, but that might not fit what everybody else is doing. So talk a little about how you guys navigate those challenges, which is really number one. You know, one of the biggest issues with anybody locally working with a national account is they've got limited warehouse space. And so bringing in another spec, another pack size is always difficult. So talk about how you guys.
Yeah. And now that everybody's working with everybody, there's a new set of requirements, right? Like if it's under our agreements, they need to buy it from us. If it's from a competitor's, they have to buy it from them. So on top of this, when we talk about optimizing, these distributors are trying to, their ability to grow their sales because they're working with everybody is increased, but now they're trying to be compliant with everybody. And they're buying, you know, they could be buying the same spec, you know, product, but from different, you know, from us, from a competitor, to be compliant, right? So, and you want to talk about optimizing, that's the opposite of optimizing, but that's the challenge that they have to navigate. The truth is, I think the winning formula will probably be who can increase, who can, you know, be the most flexible, right? Like just if you can buy it locally, buy it locally. If you can buy it regionally, buy it regionally. But people are looking for more compliance, right? And with food safety and traceability, they need to know where it's coming from, right? So it is very complicated for a lot of people, you know, for the distributors too. And, you know, with the national restaurant concepts, they're trying to protect themselves. So they want all the bells and whistles that come with the program, but they can't pay for it.
Right.
Right. So it's truly when I say, and I know it sounds a little gloomy or whatever, but that is kind of the state, right? Now there's all kinds of opportunity due to the lack of like, you know, standardization efficiency. I mean, you know, you can't just call a logistics company and say, hey, I want to pay less, right? No logistics companies really mastered LTL, right? So less than truckload. So there's so many trucks on the road with so much inefficiency. And until we can kind of rein that in, and I don't know who's going to do it. No one has, not even close. So, you know, and then it impacts us because then they, you know, the concepts have to raise their prices.
Obviously, everyone talks about inflation and food costs going up, and you know it's seemingly impossible to go to a lot of restaurants and get out for under $100 nowadays. But people are looking at, you know, why that is. And you mentioned
food costs should go up,
right?
Like,
first of all, I think that's a good thing just for everybody to understand how many different cost opportunities there are along the way for something to actually get to a restaurant. You mentioned freight. Is being really the biggest. So
since
I think it's good to talk about from your perspective nationally how prices are different. Obviously, the farther you get away from where it's grown, you're going to have to pay more in freight. And just talk a little bit about some of those other costs that go in that people may not understand.
Yeah, I mean the food safety and quality assurance requirements. So this is what people don't like to hear, but when people go out and sue companies for you know, whatever they, you know, they claim they ate something that was bad and then they go out and want to sue them for it, right? Like what happens then? It's then all these quality assurance, food safety standards get put in, right? Not saying that's a good thing, right? But that is a huge cost, a huge labor intensive. It is so challenging for all of these companies to do. Not a bad thing, but then with that comes, you know, increases, right? Those increases always get passed on us, yeah. Right? But it is just so difficult now. The produce industry is so challenging because of like, you know, with those standards and then, you know, the amount of just getting the product from California, you know, to the East Coast, right? The amount of picks, it can take days. And like I said, it's dying as you're, you know, as it's grown. If you go out to a field and see how this stuff is done, I don't know if you've ever done a field tour, but
yeah,
even the most efficient out there, it is such a hard job.
Yeah.
I mean, people are on their hands and knees, like cutting, right? All day long. And it's just, it is hard. There's no other way to say it. And food costs, I really do think should go up. Now, a lot of the inflation is just companies saying, oh, inflation, your prices are going up, but they've probably become more efficient in some of their, our industry hasn't, right? We can introduce tech and whatnot, but there's just no way to technologically, like there are ways, but it's just hard to get product from California.
Yeah.
you know, that's dying in the perfect. And then every time somebody kicks it because they need the perfect quality and whatnot. I mean, what do you do with that? Right. Yeah. It's a whole load that could get shut down. So it's, you know, it should go up. Yeah. Driver costs. Right. I mean, drivers who used to, you know, do, you know, make deliveries. Now they go to Uber. Right. Mm-hmm. For a similar rate, if not more money. Right. Yeah. Easy job versus a hard job. So it's you know, it has a lot of its challenges.
I think you just mentioned the driver piece, but when it comes to drivers, selectors, everything that goes into just once the product actually in the borderline miracle that it takes to actually get the product
it is
to the actual distribution center, from there, I think most people probably don't understand that that selection to get product to restaurants by, you know, the golden hour that everybody wants between, you know, 6 and 8 a.m. or 7 to 9 a.m., they got to start picking those orders at, you know, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then drivers are getting there and starting to get out by 4 o'clock and then at 4 in the morning. And then if they've got to get second runs out and customers need more product, whatever it is, like, they're going to wind up working until, you know, 4 or 5 p.m. So they get the worst of both worlds. And so all of those costs that go into it, but, and you were in the transportation side of it too. So you've got a unique perspective here, but how has that seen?
Not a good perspective. Yeah.
Has it gotten any better? Is it more difficult now with all the options?
It's more difficult because the standards continue to go up with all these, you know, with all the regulation, and the job is already hard enough as it was, right? And it's a miracle because this is 24/7, 365, right? Yeah. I mean, honestly, like some companies shut down on Saturdays and Sundays. Actually, none on Saturdays. Some on Sundays, you know, to get some balance. But the people that work in those companies, it is never ending, you know? And they have to check the slots. They can't just throw out anything because it's not a one-size-fits-all. You might get some bad product. Like, imagine having to prioritize how you inspect product, right? And the different ripening, you know, the temperature control with tomatoes and bananas. So it is truly, when I say this, I mean it, like food prices going up, like I can empathize with because I see what it's like. And more people are putting more premium on the, you know, the produce part, which means it has to be, if it's going to take more of a center stage in the plate, then it needs to be a better quality.
Yeah. So, but I think a good example probably for everybody is everyone's been in that situation where they get an avocado or banana or something, sits on the counter, and then all of a sudden a couple hours go by and then it becomes bad. It goes from being unusable to bad. And so think about, you know, for everybody listening, thinking about taking that from just your countertop to a 100,000 square foot facility and having to manage that at scale, which is still, like you said, there hasn't been much advancements in technology to help with that. And so people are managing that on their own.
And I'm a big believer in standing by what you buy, even if it's faulty.
Yeah.
So when I walk by and I see my mom with a 99 cent receipt with a tomato that she wants to return, it drives me crazy, right? Like, it's because, you know, and, it, you know, that's their whole generation, how they like to operate. But at the end of the day, it is a lot, right, to execute this. And you're just not going to get it right all the time.
Yeah.
You're just not. And so, you know, I'm not pleading a case for a little more empathy for the industry by any means, but it does. It's, you can't look at every single thing.
Yeah.
And there's no technology that can look at every single product, right? And make sure that it's perfect. So it's, but here's what I would say. You want to talk about an industry that's going to stand the test of time. Like, there's not, it's not something that's easily replicable, right? Like, you have to have land, you have to know how to do it, you have to know how to grow product. It is a long process. And food's always going to be here.
Yeah.
Right. And so in that regard, it's a very, very good place to be in an industry that will continue to, I think, grow in a lot of respects. So
yeah, there's obviously, there's been some introduction in automation, whether it be tomato sorters in the facilities, whether it be, robots and Paso Robles that will go and basically use UV technology to help with the mold and stuff.
Totally.
Grapes that fit specifically on the vines. It could be autonomous trucks that can do some of those deliveries. But you mentioned at the beginning, you know, the age and you were recommended to go into this industry because there's not that much young talent coming in, and it's definitely an older industry. What have you seen over 15 years, you know, from looking at the landscape? What does it look like? Does it look like there have been more people that have been getting into it?
And this is a topic I'm very passionate about, because I think there's like this little rivalry between baby boomers and millennials, and there doesn't need to be, right? I think it's an industry with a lot of baby boomers who are, you know, have put in a lot of sweat, and they just want, you know, people to come in and have appreciation for what they've built and the grind that they've put in. And with that comes a ton of knowledge, and they want to provide that. And for anybody, you know, any millennial that is and younger, right? I just always categorize those two, but there is so much opportunity. I've tried to bring quite a few people in, and the truth is that, you know, working alongside that kind of industry experience is invaluable, right? And there is, you know, tons of room to grow. And we've seen it. Anybody that has come in, you know, that I've been a part of has moved up very fast, and will continue to if they want to put the effort in, because there's so much knowledge that's there to be shared.
Yeah.
That can streamline the process quickly. And no one filling these jobs either. I love the industry. I left briefly. But I love what the industry has done for my life, my career, and, you know, anybody that I've seen come in as well. So,
but how do you get more people? Like, now, you know, everybody between crypto, between tech, AI, all these,
they don't know about it. Right.
Right. Well, there's all these, you know, very flashy, no one's drilling you, you know, and no one's selling courses on social media about getting into the food distribution world.
Of course.
And people don't realize it's also much different now than it was when a lot of the people in these leadership positions came up to its face. Like, a lot of people made a lot of money in this business, 80s, 90s, maybe early 2000s. There's a lot less to be made now because of either public companies buying them or just cost structures in general. So how do you, because I know you're generally always recruiting and trying to find people to bring
totally.
In. Like, how do you sell the industry now versus some of these other opportunities that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, one, I would say this, one of the big ways to sell it is opportunity for rapid advancement. It doesn't come with, you don't need, quite frankly, you don't need a degree to get in the industry, right? Which is a barrier to entry for some. It's becoming more like that. But you and I both know, if you don't have a specialty, it's hard to get a job out of college, right? Doesn't matter how well you did in school. Doesn't matter how sharp you are. There's just, it's hard to figure out how to penetrate, right? Because not many companies are looking to hire people with no experience, just the way it is, right? So everybody's looking for that start, right? Especially people without the specialty. And so it's hard, because it's not like an industry filled with networking. It's an old school industry. It still is. And most companies, you'll see a collection of family members, you know, and then family members' friends. Like, that's what it was. So, you know, it's almost the opposite of where most companies are. So if you want, if they're looking for an industry with rapid growth opportunities, I don't want to downplay it, but you don't have to be like a superstar either. You know what I mean? You come in, you play ball, you show respect to the people that, you know, built these companies, and you learn and make some impact. Like, you'll rise pretty fast.
I saw firsthand, whether you were driver, selector, accounting, whatever department was, just showing up.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Because there's so much turnover that goes on that people don't realize. You just show up and, you know, and have a good attitude, you can rise up pretty quick.
Absolutely. And that fresh set of eyes goes a long way too, right?
Yeah.
The industry's dying for that kind of stuff. I mean, so it's there.
Is anybody that you either, you know, in your network or that you've worked with in the past, is anybody doing that really well, recruiting?
They're trying, right? Now, a lot of, in the industry, a lot of the recruiting is for drivers, right? And selectors, the hard positions to fill. As far as some of these others, like on the PROAC side or on the GPO side, you know, we're getting more and more in that space. But, you know, the other thing is everybody's running so lean that developmental tree,
right,
that companies, you know, we're working towards, that's gone away in a lot of respects. So I wouldn't say anybody's doing it well. I mean, you know, Yeah, I wouldn't say anybody's necessarily doing it well in the industry.
But that's the opportunity.
They're trying, yeah.
Yeah. But that's the opportunity.
That's the opportunity.
It's not glamorous.
No.
It's not cool. You know?
No.
I mean, it's really fascinating, and there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. But at the end of the day, the industry as a whole does a bad job on PR and the image that they're putting out, that it can be a cool, dynamic industry to work in. Everybody likes restaurants. And so, like,
love restaurants.
You've got great piece there. But I think that's, to me, what's been missing is people actually selling the opportunity versus, you know, some of these other industries that do a really good job. And they have other people talking and branding the industry outside of it.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is cool. I mean, my company's out of Monterey, California, which is adjacent to Carmel. So that's where I go for my headquarter trips, right? Not many better places in the United States, right? So awesome place to go. Still, I hate using this buzzword, but it still has a lot of relationship in its soul, right? Unlike, you know, tech hasn't completely taken over, which, you know, I don't think is a bad thing. I've learned to appreciate that. And look, the industry, I mean, think about what it's done. You know, you rose up extremely fast where you were. Nikki, moved up into a role, you know, he continues to move up in, right? I mean, Smo has built a multi-million dollar fresh food logistics driven company, right? Like, and you know, it came pretty quick, right? And so, and those are just a couple examples. There are plenty more out there. It's looking past what the industry is and just looking at people's career, which matters to so many people.
Yeah.
This is a great place to be.
Yeah. The landscape for deals and M&A a little bit. Obviously, most of these large national companies all followed a pretty similar playbook. Go in, buy up the local companies, fly them under one flag, or have formed regional companies doing the same model. Since you have access to the full country, what are you seeing? Are you seeing any M&A activity? And I'll preface that by, again, the margins in this business are terrible. So
tons.
Unless you're able to buy up and really get scale, it's difficult to make transactions work. That's something that I think, regardless of the industry, a lot of companies are having issues with succession, with finding buyers, especially in this landscape of higher interest rates and stuff. So are you seeing anything on the M&A side?
Tons.
People looking for deals?
Tons, which really, you know, changes the landscape even more when, you know, a private equity company comes in and buys some of these companies. The company, wherever their alignment was, they now have to kind of play like in a Switzerland kind of role where they're, you know, trying to maintain relationships with everybody at that point, right? Then with that comes profit metrics,
right?
A revamped profit metric, right? That they're not used to, which means, you know, less service, more markup, right? And then it becomes like they have to change their whole model that they were built on, right? To hit those thresholds. And it's happening more and more, right? And probably will continue to happen more and more. And when it happens, you know, what, you know, those companies' grandmaster plan is always seems to be vertically integrate. But that's a whole nother, you know, challenge in the industry is how do you integrate all these companies that have operated separately, right? Without a, you know, really strong corporate team that can help do that, right? Because there's so much work to do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So how do you go in and integrate this company with this company who might use this, who might use this? So yeah, the strategy is to vertically integrate, but how realistic it is remains to be seen. I love where we are at ProAct because we're not heavily asset-based, right? So we are very flexible and nimble. I think that's something that is going to help down the road with all this push on compliance. The compliance and like it's going to wear people down and companies down to a point where they're going to have to like free themselves up to operate in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's been our long-term strategy. And I like very much, you know, where we are on that.
Future is going to be interesting because if you mentioned private equity, again, that model is pretty simple. Come in, cut costs, standardize, usually lower service, try to maximize their margin. If they're turning around and try and take it back out to the market, we've also seen that a bunch on the on your, you know, the ultimate customer side, on the restaurant side, either private equity or a company goes public, they start to look into cut costs. Usually that means cutting back on the fresh product, quality goes down, death spiral happens, and then all those chain restaurants that
yep.
were great, you know, when we were growing up, become complete disasters and
of course.
Usually file for bankruptcy. So if we see that on the distributor side and we see that on the restaurant side, that's going to make for a pretty interesting future where we're basically continuing to fight each other even more.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought that I haven't thought about on the distributor side, but that very well could be coming. You know, the mergers and acquisitions space, you know, just started around here probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. So it's still relatively new. It's coming rapidly, but it's still relatively new. And it will be interesting to see how it goes, right? But at some point, there's going to have to be, because that's another thing when these private equity companies come and buy these restaurant chains, the first thing they do is reach out to the Proacts of the world and, you know, want to revamp their whole contract, yep. right? And what does that mean? It just means they want to pay less, right? So where does that come from? You know, then what?
Yeah.
You know, to the distributors, hey, you know, you need to take a margin hit.
Yeah.
Or we need to take a margin hit. So it's just hard. Everybody's trying to drive everything down and the requirements are going up, which, you know, yet again, in all industries are doing that to some degree, but yeah. when the product's dying, it's just a little bit more challenging.
Well, it's a extremely fascinating industry that most people don't know anything about. I'm glad we were able to take a little bit of time here and open it up a little bit, get people to understand it. Any parting words on just, you know, talk to either the, you know, potential people that are looking to get into the business or looking for a change or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say great place to start your career. You know, I strongly suggest it is a massive industry with, you know, not many people coming in. The industry will continue to grow and is growing. Forget the margin attrition I've talked about. It is going to continue to grow. And people will continue to eat and people will continue to try and be healthy. And this all fits very well into, you know, the produce industry model. So I would say that. And I would say, you know, if you see price increases on food and it bothers you, just understand that there is at least some substance to it because, you know, it definitely is, you know, a challenging industry. So I appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed talking about it.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing your unique insight.
Yeah.
That's another episode of the Kronos Podcast. I look forward to seeing you next time.